Do you want to find solutions that help teams make better decisions, solve problems faster, and free their creative minds to come up with smarter solutions? There's a workshop for that. Bonjour, I'm Nati Ravez, and I'm delighted to welcome to this show facilitators and experts who share their knowledge and experience of everything you need to know in the world of facilitation, giving you tips and tools for leading groups, sparking collaboration, and driving innovation. Thank you for tuning in, and let's go.
Today, it's a special day because I'm not hosting this podcast alone for the special guest we have invited today. I will host this podcast with my friend and partner in crime, Appa. Hi, Appa. How are you?
Hello, Nati. How are you doing? Long time no see.
Yeah, long time no see. Too long time. So today we have a special guest for you and for me also, because you told me a few weeks ago you absolutely have to invite this woman. She is an inspiration. I've been working with her and I'm still inspired by what she's doing. So I would not take you the chance to introduce her. So please, who is our guest of the day?
So our guest of the day is Gitanjali Panappa. She is a partner at EY for Business Transformation, as well as leading the EY innovation hubs that are called Wavespace. So I met her as a member of the Wavespace team when I worked there. And the first time I met her, I think, you know, I was googly-eyed because I'd never really had, let's say, a role model who was, firstly, I mean, I'm Indian, so is she, but also a person who packed so much of a punch when I met her for the first time and really, you know, made me feel like I belong. So that's kind of why I wanted you to talk to her. And also because when she speaks, as you will hear in the rest of the episode, there is so much depth and yet so much fun there with whatever she's saying. So I think this was going to be a great episode and we are going to hear a lot of words of wisdom.
So I would say, hello, Gitanjali. How are you?
Hi, Nashley. I'm very well. Thank you to you and Appa for having me. I have been doing a little bit of prep for our episode together, so thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And how does it feel to hear that you're such an inspiration for one of your former employees?
Very recently in my life, I hit a milestone. And my milestone is I've done 25 years of consulting work. So I've been in the workforce for 25 years. Mm-hmm. And when you start off, you don't think about it. But the past few years, I've been thinking about the people that maybe I've had an impact on. And it's very, it feels like a little bit like, ooh, somebody was influenced by me. Like, isn't that cool? Because in my head, I'm still like about 37. You know, like I feel like, oh, I can't be having impact on people. And then Naka, when you say something wonderful like that, I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to tell my mother.
Please do.
I think inspiring people actually is the most rewarding thing that we could have. I mean, I see it with this podcast when it's inspired some people I see in my work. And I couldn't wait to meet you. And I would be very curious that you tell us a little bit more about your journey. What have you done? So 25 years on consulting, how did you start?
So I started my career in India. So I always tell my clients who are American or European that I started on the other side of the fence. Yeah. Now I feel like I should update that story because there is no fence anymore. There is no other side. But I did start in India. And I was actually just telling somebody that I only spent actually 2 years in India. So of my years of work, only two have been in India. And I hope in the future that I will do more to contribute to my home country. From India, I actually wrote this down. We did a dinner table conversation yesterday with the kids and everybody about what should I say is my journey. And we came up with three things that we should say, that I should say. So one is the countries that I've lived in because I find it most interesting. So I grew up in India, and with work, I moved to the U.S. And at that point in time, when I moved to the U.S., it was still new, the collaboration between India and U.S. So I got to do a ton of work working across borders. So it wasn't just US companies. And then from the US, I moved to Singapore. Mm-hmm. I spent a bit of time there. Mm-hmm. From Singapore, I got to manage projects in South Africa and Botswana and Mozambique. And then from there as well, I went to Australia. And then I did a little pop over into Silicon Valley, which was very fascinating, really inspiring. And then I said, okay, listen, now I've done everything in terms of locations and continents, mm-hmm. and Europe was missing. So I gave myself a year to bring myself to Europe. And so now I am in Zurich, and I live and work in this region. So that was one part that the kids wanted me to tell you is countries. Which countries have I been in? And then I've only actually ever had two, maybe three major jobs. So it's been also my 10-year anniversary with EY.
Wow.
And I spent 10 years with Accenture. And I spent 5 years with a company that is now called Mahindra Tech. So I tend to do things in big chunks and not much of a hopper. But I think later in my career, as I'm progressing, I might become a hopper because there are certain things I want to do. And the topics that I do, which is why I might want to become a hopper, is the topics I do. I started with something that is called corporate communications, which in the old days was open a newspaper and there would be ads about the company. That was the old days. So I did that, the advertising and corporate communications. That evolved into kind of creating training material. And I then became an instructional designer. But I wanted to add on an understanding of how people actually use that content. So I did organizational change management. Mm-hmm. And then I did a lot of organizational change management in the context of technology with Accenture. And that has evolved to having an innovation role with EY in Wavespace. So that's the sort of the arena of business transformation that I work in.
As I said, it will be very inspiring, this conversation.
So now you are still at EY. You are working in helping organizations in their digital transformation. I would like to hear from you, what is the biggest role and impact of people in a digital transformation?
So maybe now 10 years ago, I worked with a person who ran a massive program for the rail system in the UK. And we were discussing this question. Mm-hmm. So what is the role of people? And we kind of stumbled upon the fact that it's not organizations that transform, it's people that transform. Mm-hmm. It's not processes mm-hmm. that transform, it's the people who use the processes. So I think it's very insufficient when we talk about what is the impact of people on transformation. It should be the other way around. It's not about the transformation, it's about the people. If you choose as an organization, as a collective, to transform, then you will. If you choose to fight the transformation, you won't. Yeah. So for me, the very key component is it's not organizations transforming, it's people transforming. And when I think about people, I try not to aggregate it into chicken, or the Germans say Leute. Yeah. I like to actually have individuals that I'm thinking about. So why would Nathie want to transform? Mm-hmm. What's in it for her if at the end of it, she's probably going to not have the same scope of work that she used to. So it's no longer fun for her. So why should she? So having that thought about that individual why, which I think in terms of change management, we now call them personas. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. thinking through those personas and personalizing those personas. So for a chief transformation officer, they're not just titles and little icons on an org chart. These are real people. This is Shilpa, who lives in India, whose job is going to change. And this is Marco. And when you start thinking of them as individuals, certainly as massive organizations, we tend to aggregate. And I think there's power in disaggregating it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that answer your question a little bit, at least?
Absolutely. And is it easy to make it clear to organization?
So it never is, because all of this costs money.
Yeah.
We're talking about dollars and we're talking about budget.
Yeah.
Right? So when the goal of an organization, especially a capitalist organization, is efficiency and then efficacy. And so if you can talk in the language of the organization, so a CFO, even though he has a heart, or she has a brain, or he has the context of Marco and Shilpa, it still needs to be converted into a language that he understands. So I think it's very powerful. In Wave Space, we have this thing, understand the person's emotion. Mm-hmm. Why would they want to make this change? Even the person is reusing the budget. Understand their political context and give them a rational reason. So it's emotional, political, and rational. Mm-hmm. So is it easy? No. But if you have a thing to tell the story to the person who needs to sign off budget, surely yes.
I mean, maybe I can ask a question here related to what you're saying, because I think a lot of what Wavespace does, the facilitation, is driving these outcomes and making it clearer to those decision makers what some of these elements are when you're driving this change, right? So in your view, because you've seen both the consulting part, so you've done the work, try to, let's say, make people understand that being human-centered is important. And on the other hand, driven these larger scale workshops, which align a lot of people at the same time and drive these decisions. Do you think that there is a place for facilitation and design-driven organizations, you know, the trend towards moving towards this kind of human-centeredness in a larger scale in organizations? Does that question make sense?
Mm-hmm. So it's maybe for me to help myself understand it better, and you split it two parts. What's the role of the facilitator and how do we scale it? Because mm-hmm. can we connect it and maybe stackable authors? So when I think about what is the role of a facilitator, I think of that as a role that has certain objectives. So it's a role that brings, by definition, a little bit of abrasion. This is not a role that just agrees and pushes things along. This is a role that does a little bit of a fight, mm-hmm. a little bit of a debate, mm-hmm. a little bit of intellectual tension. So I think the role of the facilitator is to do that. The other role of a facilitator in this sort of a context is not to get consensus, but it's to win the dirty laundry out. It is to bring it out onto the table and say, well, if we're going to just pull it up and pull it away, it's not going to work anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think the role of a facilitator is not consensus, but it is getting dirty laundry out and then teaching people, once it's there, how to collaborate. Right? Mm-hmm. And then the other part that I think is maybe a more philosophical view about it is, a facilitator is outside of an organization. And by outside, I mean outside of that team, right? It's not within that team. Has the ability to be a guide. Has the ability to be like Yoda. Like, let me show you the path. We didn't know what the path is, but let's discover it together. Has the ability to be, I really like that word, guide, maybe. Because a guide does not actually necessarily know where we're going. But can say, hey, look, there's a hole over there. Don't fall into that. Or look, that's a dark space. Don't go over there. Okay, take a flashlight. So guide has the ability to do that. So when I think, what is the role of a facilitator? That's what I would. Not the, can you keep time? Can you make a joke? Is it an icebreaker? That's all hygiene factors. That's basics. That's what any good facilitator knows how to do. But a genius facilitator does these things. Mm-hmm. So now when I think about how that scales, this is highly individual dependent. So if I am an organization that has, I'm making up a number, 50,000 people, and I need, they are at least around 50,000 people, let's say 5 leadership teams. So I need 5 nappies or I need 5 months to do that. So is facilitation a scalable skill? It's not. It's one of the skills, in my view. Can AI do it? Sure. A little bit, sort of, kind of, to help you speed up. There's no way to duplicate, replicate an Athi or an APA. So from a scale perspective, this is like, I'm never going to get my hair cut by a robot. I'm going to get my hair cut by a lady or a man who has cut hair, Indian hair preferably, you know, so he's singing hair maybe. They have expertise in that. In the same way, facilitation can be made faster in terms of the design, but the delivery is not scalable.
I love the dirty laundry, the way you said it, because not everybody can get that dirty laundry out, and not everybody can then, you know, use that setting to reach some kind of consensus or some kind of understanding of the topic. So I really like the way you put it, the dirty laundry. I'm going to remember that metaphor and maybe steal it, as I have stolen some other things from you. Right. Steal like an artist.
Yes, exactly.
What I wanted to ask is really about how facilitation and how this human-centeredness, in a, as you said, in a large scale, can drive economic growth for companies. And have you seen that as the leader of the Innovation Hub at Wavespace?
So, into your question is, how I see what facilitation or teaming drives economic growth? Is that the question?
Yeah. Also, how do you speak that language to those CFOs and, you know, to the people who are speaking numbers to show the value of the work that we do, right? Because it is a lot. Sometimes it is softer to explain.
Yes.
And how do you drive and how to, you know, my husband is a CFO, so we always get into these conversations where he's like, no, but what is the numerical value that you're bringing to this session? You know, how are you going to justify a use of a facilitator, justify a use of this human-centered thinking?
I think it depends on what type of facilitation you're doing. So
let me take.
So I was recently speaking to the chief innovation officer of a famous elevator company, and she was telling me about how she uses facilitators to help her engineers and designers unlock where they are stuck. And we're talking about physical engineering, drawings, design, that kind of a thing. And so she uses the techniques of design thinking to unlock their brain. So her KPI is not a facilitation KPI. Her KPI is, what do the engineers produce and develop? So is there a direct correlation? Absolutely not. She can't say, oh, because I hired Abba or because I hired Nathi, now we got 300 ideas. No, she cannot say that. But I think the world is getting more comfortable, including CFOs, including your husband, probably Abba, that not everything is a direct correlation. There's a lot of indirect.
Yeah.
So an example could be, if you need to prove something, and when I say need, that is really feeding somebody's ego. Right? Otherwise, anybody with half a brain can see the value. The only reason that they ask you for all of this numbers is because they have somebody else that they need to prove it to. And so if you address the political part of it, not the rational part is, where's my KPI and this is what I produce. But the political part of why are they actually asking this question, I think we get a better answer. So I would not go down the path of trying to prove the value of facilitation. I would try and have people experience the value of facilitation. If you have experienced great facilitation, again, this is not scalable behavior, because you don't have to experience everything to understand the value of it. But this would be something that people need to experience to open up the wallet. If they've seen it, they've experienced it, they can. But being said, there are very clear things that you can measure, right? So if we take my organization as an example, we can measure it. We have a dollar value of things that flow through. I know, for example, there are a few banks that have a similar facilitation pool of people, and they look as well for the political decisions that this team makes. So once you had a facilitated session, are we going to invest in this startup, as an example? And then they follow that through to see if the startup actually added time to that bank. So they're connecting it again longer term. So if I were to summarize it in my brain, I would say forcing a correlation, waste of time, total waste of time to force a correlation. The second thing that I would say is that if you understand the political rationale for why people are asking that, we change the way we answer. We wouldn't answer with numbers. We would probably answer with, you know what, so-and-so told me that facilitation is great. That's great political currency. Right? And the third thing that I would say is duration. The power of facilitation does not come at the end of the session. It comes maybe 2-3 months, 2-3 years, 10 years later. So changing the duration that you're talking about, I think, might help.
Yeah, I try to tell the freelance facilitators that I'm mentoring that it's when they are talking about workshops and facilitation, they will not get to the brain to the clients, but they have to talk about the problems they can solve or they can help to solve, because they will also not solve the problem, but there is a pain point and there is a gain that the client would like to have at the end, and they are here to help them on the bridge to between the pains and the gains.
Yes, I might now have to steal that or borrow it quite. I like that, the gap between pain and gain and helping you bridge that gap. The language that I've been using to describe that is, are you asking the right exam question?
Mm-hmm.
So I will help you first come up with the right exam question, and then I will help you derive the answer for your exam question. But it's sort of the same thing as you're describing now. There's, you know, there's a pain, which is the exam question, and then there's a gain, which is the answer to the exam question. And yeah, it's all the squiggly path to get there. That's what a facilitator does.
Yeah. And the facilitator is actually, when we are thinking about your client, talking about our engineers, facilitator is here to unlock the potential of the teams, actually. He's not producing the outcome. He helps the people to come to an outcome or to have different perspective or different choices of way they want to go through. This is how I see a facilitator.
I think that what I really like, but the ones that I have personally experienced as well, so not just delivered but also experienced, is where a facilitator has a really large bag of tools.
Yeah.
Because when you see certain, let's go back to long day example. If you see a ketchup stain, you need to put a different kind of thing on it. And if you see a wine stain, you need to put a different kind of thing in it. Yeah. If your guy doesn't have that toolkit, so you need all of the tools needed to clean up your dirty laundry and make, and, you know, iron it and make it look good now.
Yeah.
So if I were to poorly extend that analogy, I would say we need more tools. So facilitators that have a robust set of tools and are not married to just a singular set of tools or a singular methodology, I think would thrive in organizations that require that intensity.
Yeah.
I mean, what you were talking about reminds me of this generalist versus specialist debate, and where and kind of trying to understand where facilitators fit in this kind of, let's say, continuum, right? Because you have facilitators who can go in and solve any problem. And I know that I've had so much experience with life sciences, with other industries, and all these different types of problems. But building a specialty seems to be kind of also kind of trend which is emerging. I mean, Nati, we've seen this as well in the work that we do with freelance facilitators, that being known for a particular topic is very important to be able to sell your services. And similarly, I know within industry as well that, you know, having that sector focus as a facilitator is important because you also bring that business knowledge. But, you know, I'm just trying to understand, what do you think about this, Gitanjali? Because there is a lot of debate around whether you need to be a true generalist to be a facilitator, or having that, let's say, topic expertise is also something that can help and help you guide the conversation better. But you're not that, you're not away from the topic anymore. You do have a kind of stake in it. So
I'm trying to extend the dirty laundry one and tell you this really smells, this debate is, it can actually make me a little angry, this debate. The reason it makes me just a little bit angry, not too much, just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other things in life to be more angry about. But the reason it makes me angry is, who is having this debate? Who is questioning this? The reason I say that is I always find it's people who don't understand what you do that say, oh, you're a generalist. Whereas, allow me, Appa, to rewrite that story. Just like, let's say I'm taking you as an example. Appa is actually a master at her craft. You give her any topic, she knows how to navigate a team through that to first solidify the exam question, pain that they're feeling, and then navigate them through the squiggly path of arriving at the answer, which is the gain. Appa can confidently do that for you and your team because she has a specific set of sectors that she focuses on that allows her to bring that insight into it. And having lived and worked in 4 or 5 different countries, she can actually help handle a diverse team really well. I just told your story. That does not sound like a generalistic, light version person to me at all. So the next time somebody says, oh, generalist versus specialist, slap them in the face. I'm sorry. But like, that's a stupid debate to have. It's how you choose to tell your story. If I choose to tell my story of, you know, I couldn't make up my mind, so I did a little bit of training, and then I did a little bit of this, and then I did a little bit of that, and I somehow ended up in innovation, that's a completely different story.
Yeah.
So you own it. You own it. This is your craft, and you're really good. I'm trying not to pass. You're really, really good at your craft. That does not make you a generalist. That makes you an expert, a specialist.
Yeah.
So I would just change the debate. I would walk away from that question to the like, I don't even understand it. Sorry, definitely. I'm serious about this.
Yeah, I think the point that, and there are a few freelance facilitators who are just starting out, discovering facilitation and wanting to make it a career. So, of course, they maybe not have the experience to do that. And there is two things in it. There is first, to be confident to start as a freelance facilitator, you have to have one thing that you can do, because you will still learn on your way to become an APA or to become a Gitanjali. So the other point is to find a specialty to get your feet into the door. Don't mean that you will not do something else, but that you are building a brand that companies know you as a person who can nail any process with a team, because you've been working in process in the machine industry for years, and then you can have your feet in it and then continue to learn and become someone who then you don't need to tell. I mean, this is the same as when you are studying, okay? I've been studying export and import. I never used it, but at the beginning, when I was searching for a job, I had my card, okay, I'm a business strategist in import and export, and I got my first feet. After that, I learned on the way, and then I become who I am today. So this is, I understand what you say, but this is my point of view, why I am following this strategy to help them.
So, Marinaki, what I might want to offer, so I am very often in my career the new person. I also have to figure out what is my story.
Yeah.
So every time I've moved country, I've always been the new person.
Yeah.
And being the new person, you really have to know how to open a door.
Yeah.
Right? So if I may offer to the group that is starting out, is like you with your import-export story, think about maybe, I like to use sales design thinking principles and say, come up with 3 pilot ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get married to one idea.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one idea is import export, right? So a functional expertise. Maybe another idea is maybe color, maybe gender, maybe culture, right? And maybe another idea is, you know, I really understand Formula One racing. And so I really understand the car industry and how gaming works and what I'm making that up, right? So come up with 3 ideas. Test all 3.
Yeah.
Because you never know which one is going to open more doors. Don't just have one idea. That's the same. And both see statistically which one is opening more doors for you.
This is very good. I will implement it in the next bootcamp. APA, we have to write it down.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
We're building a bootcamp for facilitators, for freelance facilitators. So this is really good kind of insight for us.
Yeah.
And then I'm gonna give you one more idea, and it's something that I'm playing with right now. So there are lots of checklists available if you Google it around your brand,
mm-hmm.
right? So you can, you know, what do you stand for? What is your brand? What is your purpose? You know, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. There's lots available, and I've done a whole bunch of it in the past 6 months just to see what was out there. And what I really liked, what I've taken away from that is when you take the 3 pilot ideas is don't try and solve for everything. Your goal and your milestones need to be tiny. So send out 10 emails with the first one, 10 emails with the next one, and 10 emails with the next one. See which one has a response rate. Don't plan out the whole thing. Don't write out a session. Don't write out what your bio is. Nothing. Just test the idea first. that once you cross that milestone, out of the three ideas, only two get email responses and throw the other idea out. Then out of the two, again, a tiny milestone is put some pricing next to it and see, okay, now I'm going to send 5 and 5. Let's see which one has better uptake. So, but I really like of everything that I synthesize now from reading is don't make big plans.
Oh, yeah.
Suffer this quickly. Catch that positive one, throw it out, add a new one in, but keep moving versus being married to here's the one thing that I'm going to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think you could be a very nice guest for our freelance facilitators.
Gitanjali is being, she's being approached for more and more. Like, do you want to help us build our business?
So I'm also considering, I have a call later this week, actually, because something that I care very much about, yes, there's business transformation and there's technology innovation, but I really care about women. Yeah. I care very much about women of color.
Yeah.
I care about, I stumbled upon a new term. It's called Women Plus. So anybody who identifies not math,
mm-hmm.
right? And I hope, I really care about these groups. And I started thinking about in my 25 years, it really has been one of those, like, you hit a milestone, you start thinking about it. What can I do to help these groups further their career? Why further in mine, too? So this is not just because, oh, I'm so, you know, I want to do something nice. It's also because I will learn from it. And I've been thinking about doing the number one thing that I think this group doesn't have going for it is how to negotiate.
Yeah.
So how do you negotiate life? How do you negotiate a contract? How do you negotiate maternity leaves? How do you negotiate coming back to work? How do you negotiate leaving work? How do you negotiate the pricing? All of these are little micro negotiations, and we go about them very differently. And I find my experience so far is most of the training and coaching and facilitation that's available is not addressing this wider set of questions, you put it that way.
Yeah.
Or this wider group mm-hmm. of people.
This is true. When you start to negotiate something, anything, then you need to have the storyline to do that.
And especially if you are a, like you said, freelance, you don't have an engine behind you.
Yeah.
You don't have a team behind you that's doing all the reviews and checking things. I think it's very tricky when you are really good at your craft, but you also have to be really good at your business.
Yeah. This is two different things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And they have different skills.
Completely different.
And some people are really good at running their business, but maybe not so much at their craft, and then they need to be at their craft, but they don't really like doing the invoicing. But there's all of that. There are two sets of skills.
So can we put your name for a special guest at the bootcamp, for example?
Well, why don't we pick a topic, and then we can level that together.
Yeah, that would be very nice.
Really. So thank you very much, both of you, for being here today. It was, I mean, you told me she's inspiring. She is.
That was really fun. I enjoyed that. I made a note, actually, to think about the scale question. Because, you know, for an organization of the scale of 500,000 people, 100,000 people, how do you scale a Nasi? And I think you don't. Which is why...
Yeah.
A great facilitator should be paid really well, but it's not a scalable skill.
Yeah, they are exceptional and unique. And each of them have their unicity. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not an APA, and she is not an ATI. And mm-hmm. I think this is the point. There are audience which would more be attracted by an ATI, and audience would be more attracted by APA, just because of a personality or of a way of saying the things. So mm-hmm. yeah. So thank you very, very much, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
What an inspiring woman. If you want to learn more about Gitanjali, contact her via LinkedIn or her website. All contact information are in the show notes. Gitanjali also shared a link of a LinkedIn community called Open Door Innovation, where people who are hold the Incorporate Innovation give 15 minutes of their time to somebody who wants to get into corporate innovation, so you can ask any question you have.
So if you're a facilitator seeking to get in contact with experts in corporate innovation, look at this. The next episode is a spin-off with my ladies, Appa and Audrey, where we're chatting about the little things of life, how to manage work-life balance, and giving insights of the Takeoff Bootcamp coming up in April. Until then, I wish you good health, success, and lots of happiness. Au revoir.